This episode of How Was Your Run Today was recorded at the WGBH studio in the Boston Public Library, located on the finish line of the Boston Marathon in Copley Square.
I'm asking you about everything.
Yeah, it's my wedding ring. I wear it on this finger. It's a little big for this one.
It fits better.
Huh. Yeah, it fits better. Looks
kind of
big.
It's a little like mine, except it's much bigger. Wow. Yours is much bigger than mine.
You know how I prepared? I prepared for this interview, Brian.
Yes, sir.
Because once again, we're joined by the great Caleb Danilov. And I prepared by going back to episode 32, a year ago.
Are we recording right now?
We are. Yes. Oh, yeah.
This is the episode that changed everything.
So I should put my clothes back on.
Oh, gosh. No, it's a public library. You can do whatever you want.
It's podcasting, okay. And it's a public library.
Do what you like.
Okay. Yeah, okay. You really can do whatever you want.
All right. Do
what
you like.
I will. I'll get comfortable.
Do what you feel. But it's amazing how little, Brian, you and I knew about this crazy, wacky world of running. And in some ways, about the crazy, wacky world of November Project, both of us really weren't fully initiated in any way. And Brian, you
verbaled for the first time
after that episode. That's right. And that's when I went to Summit Ave and then rolled my ankle.
That's right. But you turned into the Hulk.
I turned into the Hulk.
from what I saw on social media,
I went green, and it's very funny because that episode starts off because I'm very proud that I streaked the entire month of May, and yet I streaked in the wrong shoes. I was over pronating. That led to all my injuries.
Oh, right, right.
It's just funny how you have to live this through. You have to go through all of these things.
It's all part of the journey.
And I was talking up running New York. That had to fall away last fall. It was just
yeah, but you did Boston.
Yeah, out of nowhere. And I would have told you a year ago that there's no way that's happening.
Yeah.
And he says in the episode that he's all done with marathons altogether.
That's true.
What are you talking about? You got Millinocket.
No, but that's what he said then.
Oh, right. Then. I see.
And then I ran Millinocket.
And we talked about Millinocket.
Then
and
you
we
got
actually,
rejuvenated.
And we invited you to Millinocket.
Yeah.
So I want to start this off. Caleb, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Have you heard about the Millinocket Marathon?
No. Tell me all about it.
Where's the finish line? Which way to the finish line? You can't get there from here.
You have to come. It's up in Millinocket, Maine. We survived it. I didn't do anything. I just stood outside in the cold.
But it's just like a 2K race, right? That's it?
That's what we run.
That's the crankle. Oh.
Crankle 2K the night before. But you have to come up.
Well, I've signed up for it.
What?
Right.
Yeah.
What?
He actually
Months ago.
Full or half?
Full.
Damn.
However, yeah. I'm reconsidering. I'm reconsidering my whole racing life.
All right, let's get into that. Let's go. There's so many things to talk about, but let's go right to that because that's exciting.
I ran the LA Marathon, was the last marathon I ran, and training for it. I mean, it was, you know, you remember, you were training for Boston. It was unpleasant.
Wasn't great.
Very windy, very cold. You know, a lot of gear, you know, a lot of prep time. And I felt like my head wasn't in it, and I was starting to question, like, you know, have I lost my joy here?
Well, you were also had a special diet that you
right,
were
and I'd switched up my diet, so that was sort of throwing me. You know, went vegetarian, then vegan, so that was maybe throwing me off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ran LA, didn't do as well as I was hoping to, and sort of after that, I just thought, well, you know, maybe I want to take a break from marathoning. I'd done a couple marathons. I did a 50-miler, ran the perimeter Manhattan.
That's right.
I think there was a 50K in there, a couple
that was
small
a big
races.
Year. Last year was a huge year
for
you.
Yeah, there were a lot of races. And the thing is that, you know, training for these big races, and, you know, you're talking about an ultra, I mean, you're taking up full weekends. And, I mean, you need to do back-to-back runs. I was taking vacation days from work in order
to
do this.
Peter, are you listening to all of this? Are you listening to this?
Let me get my notebook
out. In all seriousness?
I'm hearing
but stuff.
But
it's time-consuming. If you have a, you know, if you have a family, a personal life, you know, it's a hard...
Thank God Peter doesn't
exactly,
have that.
Yeah, exactly.
Good thing I don't have any of those things.
No personal life.
Yeah,
I
that's
mean,
good.
Look at what we're doing on a Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
All right, well, then you're cool.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
All set.
It's going to be good.
We can move on. Yeah, so it's, I think I burned out, basically.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I want to be able to just, like, lace up and head out. And so not giving up racing altogether, I've decided to sort of focus on half marathons. You know, because you don't need to bring goo with you, really. You don't need liquids, really, for your longish runs. So that's where sort of I'm focused right now. So Millinocket possibly could be a half. I might drop down to the half.
Well, I'm limiting myself to a 2K, but that's because of injury. That was actually my decision for this year, too, was to run only halves and then probably the full Millinocket in December. But given my hip injury, even that is all thrown into question. But I think the half's a great distance for exactly the reason you said, which is the training doesn't burn you out.
Exactly. Yeah, it's totally manageable.
Yeah.
I mean, you just do one longish run on the weekend, and then you just maintain your regular running routine during the week. You know, it's half the glory, but...
Are you...
Yeah, I think it's all the same, really. Like, it's just mentally what you want out of your life from any given 90-day, 120-day period, right? Like, because I was thinking about it, because I start my 16-week ultra, in quotes, training Monday, right? Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, I just came off of a 16-week, and I had, like, I don't know, like 6 weeks in there where I wasn't doing that.
Right.
And I was trying to figure out, okay, well, how many 16-week chunks can you get into any given year? And the answer is, of course, Brian.
Several.
3.5, but okay, that's fine. You did great. So, like, yeah, you can always be training, or you can always be recovering from training, or you can, I mean, like, it's all just what you decide how you want to wake up and deal with it for the next chunk of days. I loved not training.
Yeah.
And, well, just running for running's sake.
Yes. It's glorious.
But, there wasn't the fire.
That's true.
Of a destination. Not that the destination means anything, it doesn't, but there was something about going...
It's an extra push.
When I was making my coffee in the morning and I had my calendar right next to it and I was marking off the days, or I was recording the previous run or looking to see what today's run is or weight training or whatever it's going to be.
Right.
There's something about the framework.
Yeah, it gives you focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Peter, that's really nice of you to say. However, it's not always just what we want. Everything changes because Caleb probably would have signed up for more long races if he had had a different result in L.A., I'm assuming. Is that true?
Probably. I mean, I feel like, yeah, I'm going to pull back on marathons, but I did really well in my last half.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this 75.
Did you PR?
I did.
Wow.
I did.
Congratulations.
I went sub 150, which has been like a goal for a while.
Wow.
So I feel like I redeemed myself. So maybe I've righted the ship and I'm back to, like, okay, you know, let's knock off a bunch of races.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, I feel like I need a little bit of a rest period. I did sign up like months and months ago for Ghost Train in New Hampshire, a 75 miler.
Oh my gosh.
The beauty of that is that you can drop down on race day. You can drop down to 15.
Oh, that's nice.
It's all increments of 15. So I think I'm going to still think about that, but be okay if I want to bail.
What's your longest so far?
50 miles.
And how is that? Is that okay?
I survived. I beat the cutoff.
Yeah.
I did Stonecat up in Ipswich. And, it, you know, it's a real nice course. It wasn't too technical, wasn't too steep. It's a pretty good, like, introductory 50-miler.
Yeah.
Aid stations were great. I couldn't eat most of the stuff that they had there. But, you know, they were serving, like, chili, beef chili, bacon, grilled cheeses.
So let's get into that a little bit. Because over the last, what, 6-9 months, you've gone completely vegetarian and now over the last 6 weeks or so, vegan.
Yes.
And... What have been the upsides and the downsides?
I mean, there have been far more upsides than downsides. So I started last summer. I just gave up meat.
Were the reasons for
that? Well, it was mainly because I was, you know, I'm 46 years old. I felt like I was starting to slow down. I felt like I was never going to PR again. I felt like I was working hard. I mean, I was, you know, logging a lot of miles, doing a lot of NP, a lot of stadiums, a lot of hills. But, like, why am I not getting faster?
Yeah.
You know, and I've just figured it's age, decline, you know. And I guess I just didn't want to accept that. And I figured, you know, the one piece of my fitness puzzle has been, you know, my diet. You know, it's always, you know, it's lots of burgers, lots of pepperoni pizzas, lots of mac and cheese. Pretty gray plate, not a lot of colors.
So good.
But in some ways... That's sort of the reward for putting in all those miles.
Well, exactly. Yes. I mean, that was my mentality for sure.
Right.
You know, so I wanted to, like, see if changing my diet would improve my running. Mm-hmm. That was the main thing. And I pitched this idea to Runner's World that I would sort of document it over a year. And so I've started by giving up, you know, meat, chicken, fish, you know, poultry. And there were some improvements. I think, you know, my pace improved a little bit. I lost a couple pounds. A lot of vegan runners always talk about how once they went vegan that their running is, like, dramatically improved. You know, PRing all over the place, they're faster, stronger. You know, and so I just, you know, and a lot of the top endurance runners, like, you know, Rich Roll and, you know, Charlie Engel, Scott Jurek, they're all plant-based runners.
Okay. Mike Wardian's a vegetarian.
Yeah. So I figured there had to be something to it.
Yeah.
And it's something I hadn't tried, and, you know, why not try it? So vegetarian was sort of, you know, it was good. And I was, you know, I was putting off going vegan because I was, I was a little nervous about it.
Had you mentioned that aspect of it to Runner's World, or was it strictly a vegetarian pitch?
No, it was that I was eventually going to go vegan.
And did having that work framework help you stay with it and say, oh, this is good because I'm going to be able to write about this and have deadlines?
Yes, yes. The accountability of writing about it and them expecting a piece definitely helped. That's good.
And did you have friends or training partners who were also vegan to bounce ideas off of?
Yes. I mean, Micah Risk, who's an NP person who you know. I don't know if you know her. She's the co-founder of Lighter. It's all tatted up, super fast runner. She's been a vegan a long time. She's sort of pretty popular in the vegan community. So she took me grocery shopping once. You know, we meet every once in a while at a vegan restaurant to just, you know, talk about, you know, vegan stuff.
Right. Because you need to have a strategy.
Yeah.
You do need to have a strategy. I didn't really necessarily have one. I just, you know, cut it out. You know, it's the way I quit smoking. It's the way I quit drinking. You know, just cold turkey stop.
But
you need to figure out replacements.
Because you're not only giving things up, but you're also training at the same time.
Right.
So you need those nutrients.
Right. So you're losing a protein source. You're losing a calorie source.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out what you can replace it with. I definitely went into like this slump, and a lot of vegans talk about sort of the first 2 weeks. You almost feel like it's withdrawal. It's almost like detoxing.
Sure. No, I'm sure.
So when I went meat to vegetarian, that sort of happened, and it seemed to happen for longer than 2 weeks. And I was just sort of, my run was weak, and I just stuck with it, and I sort of came out of it after a while, and my running improved a little bit. But it was when I went vegan, after the vegan slump happened, mm-hmm. When I came out of the vegan slump, there was like a notable improvement.
Okay.
So, I mean, right now I'm running, you know, I bet I've shaved a minute per mile off my pace.
Holy cow.
That's enormous.
That's considerable.
And I was probably shaved maybe 10 seconds off my pace, or 10, 15 seconds when I was vegetarian.
Wowza.
So it's the dairy and the eggs, I think, that make a big difference. I mean, you do lose weight. I've lost like 15 pounds.
Wow.
You know, since doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And the majority of that after going vegan?
Probably, yeah. The majority of it after going vegan. You know, and it really holds. There's not a lot of fluctuation. You know, it's not like it's going up and down, up and down. It's very steady.
Okay, but Caleb, I love cheese so much.
That's the big thing. That was a big thing for me.
Like the way I like air. it's a very similar level.
Cheese really saw me through. I mean, it was like, you know, mozzarella sticks, cheese pizzas. I mean, when I went
vegetarian.
Those
are vegetarian staples.
These are vegetarian, exactly. So cheese was definitely very difficult to give up, and, you know, you just got to sort of cut yourself off.
Where's pasta on the vegan allowance board?
Pasta, I mean, I'm not by no means a vegan expert or a nutritionist. Pasta, I mean, I eat pasta. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the pasta that I'm eating has, you know, any sort of milk or dairy or eggs in it. So I think it's okay. These days, almost anything can be like veganized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I've had a vegan Reuben that was, you know, it's not half bad at all.
I saw that picture. It looked good.
Yeah.
It looked real.
Strap on your feed bag. Come and get it.
And then there's this company, Beyond Meat, and they make this Beyond Burger, which is, you know, they've been developing it for years, and I eat it regularly now,
mm-hmm.
but it really does taste like a burger. You know, it sizzles like a burger.
Right.
The texture is like a burger. You know, it's the closest thing I've ever, I'd say 99%, you know, identical to a burger, and it's all plant-based. It's like pea protein. It's got 20 grams of protein in it.
Wow.
You know, so it packs a punch, and I think it's more sort of like a transition food for someone who's maybe considering vegetarian. You know, you
a sampler.
Have one of those. There. You can get, you know, so it's sort of a bridge.
Yeah. Right. A lifelong vegetarian's not going to eat this burger. It's probably someone who's been a meat eater and wanting to change their diet.
Right. Though, I mean, I eat it. I like it.
But you're not a lifelong vegetarian.
I'm not a lifelong.
That's what I'm saying. Right. If somebody's never had a hamburger.
Right. But like Micah, for example, told me that when she tried it, she almost didn't like it because it tasted too much like meat. And she like wouldn't eat it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it's all plant.
So did you feel then, having lost that weight and having gotten over the vegan slump, did you feel good going into the LA Marathon?
I did feel good. And I mean, as I wrote about, I probably started my training a little late. I slacked a little bit, and I should have done longer. You know, I'd do an 18 instead of a 21. I didn't do a 22 miler. I think the highest I did was 20. And I think I only did two of those. Mm-hmm. And, but I figured that, you know, I got this edge. You know, it's like my 6 to 9 milers, I'm banging them out at, you know, 8:20 pace.
Right.
And, which is, you know, 45 seconds better than normal.
You eat plants, damn it.
Exactly.
I can run. I eat plants.
Exactly.
I have a power.
But, you know, past 9 miles, you know, things changed. So I went in a little overconfident. I didn't go out too fast. I was pretty conscious about pulling back because it is sort of a downhill course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I got to 19 and it all fell apart. And it was like I was the meat-eating troglodyte, knuckle-dragging, you know, marathoner in my last 6 miles of hell, you know.
Right.
Doing the zombie shuffle and questioning, having religious conversations, seeking Jesus.
Because you had a history of marathons where you did go too fast, probably.
Yes, I mean, that's all. I think that's a common problem.
Yeah.
You're hopped up on adrenaline. Mm-hmm. It's easy to go out too fast. And then think that, you know, I'm just going to bank in. You know, that never works.
That doesn't really... I've never experienced it. Certainly not this past Boston Marathon.
Well, you bonked pretty hard.
Like 4 times. But I saw Caleb. I had a nice moment with Caleb and your wife.
Like it was mile 23. You were looking good. You were looking happy.
I was happy because I'd switched in my brain that this is just a nice experience now. This is lovely. The clock does not mean anything. I treated it like an ultra, in a sense. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah, it's amazing, that little mental shift, what it can do.
Yeah, I gave that up around mile 14. I was under, I guess, I don't think I was undertrained. I think I was under baseline for the training. Because the injury that I sustained and the amount of running I couldn't do for the 3 months leading up to the start of the training took me backwards so far that... Because I feel like I took the training very seriously, but...
Oh, you did. But, absolutely.
But the heat of the day and the direct sun, and it just... Sometimes your tank's full and sometimes it's not.
And all your training was done, except for that one treadmill run, was all done outside.
It was
right?
All cold out beside,
20s and windy.
Yeah,
and
except for one 14-miler that was outside, that was too hot, and I did bonk. And I guess I'm thankful that did happen, because in the marathon, when it was starting to happen, I could recognize it, as opposed to dropping and passing out.
So it all paid off.
Those things do matter. I guess. I don't know, Brian. Don't look at me like that with those puppy dog eyes, Brian.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Peter, that since 2015 Boston Marathon, you and I haven't actually been able to have a training cycle that's aligned.
That's right.
I was injured, then you were injured, and then I'm injured again. This running thing is not very good for our health or our mutual training.
I was lamenting that fact to Anna Brooks, the social media guru, saying that the thing that was hardest about this training was that I didn't have you on my Saturdays to do all the long runs together, because
right.
we did so many long runs together, and that really changed the nature. I mean, it speaks to the November project, right? It's that accountability first and foremost, but then it's also the camaraderie and the hey, we're going through this thing together. Now you're doing a different thing and I'm doing a different thing, and we're each got personal goals, and that's great. But
So much so that because I was doing all of my long runs for Millinocket solo, except thankfully Funny Fest, Ellen London went for 220s with
That's
me.
Right.
But I would incorporate, I would actually do some of my long runs on Friday so I could incorporate November Project hill work, which is not a really good idea, by the way, if you need to do a 16
You would do the workout in the morning and then go straight into your
I would
long
actually
run, or
run
go home?
2 miles to Summit Ave. Do the workout, which tends to be about 3 or 4 miles, and then go do the remainder.
That's a lot.
Straight from the workout.
Straight from there.
That's a lot.
It was a lot, but and sometimes it was great, and sometimes I really broke down.
Yeah.
But I needed to be around people. I needed to.
Yeah.
I couldn't do every long run by myself. You know what I mean?
Speaking of that, Caleb, other than NP workouts, are you a solo runner?
I am. Yeah.
And that's something you seek
it
for
is.
Yourself.
Yeah. Well, you're an early morning runner, right?
Early morning. 5:30. I feel like I need it. I mean, I love, NP and sort of that vibe, but I couldn't do it all the time.
Yeah.
You need that sort of quality time, therapy, Prozac, confessional kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of running on the Charles River. Do you see the same folks at 5:30 sort of day in and day out or week after week, or is it always a little bit different?
There are regulars that you see, but, you know, it varies. It does vary.
And how was the snow clearing this year? I think...
Well, New Balance clears it off, which is really nice. Really nice.
That is nice.
But, I mean, the winter, it wasn't too snowy, so this winter. But Fresh Pond's another place that I run. You ever run there?
Yes, that's an awesome... just around Fresh Pond is, what, a 5K, basically, right? 3 miles?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, and they do a pretty good job clearing it, too. So in the winter, that's a good place to go.
Oh, I didn't know that. Actually, I didn't know that was cleared.
Yep.
You learn something new every day, Brian.
You do. Well, speaking of November Project, there's a big event happening next weekend, which is the November Project Summit, the races of which are aligned with the North Face Endurance Challenge Series happening in Mount Wachusett.
Will this be airing on the eve of it?
Yes, this show will drop Thursday night / Friday morning.
Yes.
Caleb, can you tell us what's going to be happening Friday morning at the Boston Tribe of November Project?
Well, there could be a Guinness Book of World Records record set of most co-leaders and tribe members at a workout at Harvard Stadium.
Holy cow.
So they're switching up the days in order to give sort of all the out-of-town NPers, taste of the stadium, taste of that pain.
Yeah.
Where it all began.
The
crucible.
I remember one workout, there was like 1,500 people there. I mean, it could top that, 2,000 people. You know, it'll be a show. High hype, the founders will be there. A lot of NP celebrities.
And how many tribes are there at this point?
It's hard 41, to keep up. I think 41. I think?
That's astonishing.
It's hard to keep up. Every time I check social, there's a new hashtag.
You're going to have to come out with a second edition of the book to talk about all of those tribes. That's a chapter apiece.
Yeah. I mean, it should be pretty exciting. And then the next, then the whole weekend is the summit, which basically takes place this year at Mount Wachusett, which is the North Face Endurance Challenge Series. Most people sign up for the marathon relay. Are you guys running it?
So I had signed up. I actually didn't know that the marathon relay was the thing.
So would you sign up for the 50K?
Of course.
I'd love that.
I signed up for the half marathon because that was going to be my race this year. So I signed up for that. Was one of several half marathons that I am registered for. However, given the hip injury and the fact that I'm just this week starting to get back into running, I knocked it down to a 10K, which is 6 miles. Hopefully I'll be able to do it. I hear the course is really technical and challenging.
I keep hearing the word gnarly.
So I don't
or,
think there's...
Or the Skyline Trail on EPO. That's the other description I've heard.
Okay.
Have you run the Skyline Trail in the Fells?
In the Fells, yes, of course.
Yeah.
That's loose rock and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, lots of roots, lots of rock, lots of...
So Andrea Bonnie Gould, the artist in residence, was already signed up for the 10K. So we're going to do that together.
At a nice pace.
Well, there's a time limit, so we may or may not finish, but I think we'll start at the very back of the pack.
What day is the 10K?
That's on Sunday. Yeah, all the shorter races are all on Sunday.
I see.
Are you signed up for a race?
Yeah, I'm doing the marathon relay with Jesse Ledeen, who he was in the NP movie. So it's just, right now it's just the two of us.
So you have a half marathon right there.
That's right.
Do you do it in one clip? Like, do you do a 13.1 and then he does, or do you switch it up?
Well, it's funny. Chris Heisler, one of your former guests.
Who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that guy.
Yeah. Headband. He was kind of pushing me towards, he was like, you should just do back-to-back. And, I guess so you don't get sort of cold and, between legs.
Well, sure. Run 6 miles and then stop for an hour and then go and do it again.
Yeah.
Not impossible.
I don't like that.
I mean, I did it before at the previous North Face challenges, and though this one apparently it's taken people like an hour and a half, 2 hours to complete just the 6 miles.
Yeah.
So you're conceivably waiting around for an hour and a half, 2 hours while your partner comes in.
Is the terrain that challenging?
Yeah, it's very hairy.
Apparently, it's like very steep.
Very steep. And the given the weather we've had in Boston this spring, who knows what it's going to be like. Yeah. I mean, we're already looking at this week it dropping back down to the low 50s and raining again.
It's going to be fun.
So,
Are you coming?
I'm not. Come on. Look at him. He needs to just go do what... That's fine.
Do his Brian thing.
No, I have to go be in a cave and meditate.
Actually, no. Peter, what's your long run? What's your schedule for next weekend?
I think it's like a 7 or an 8.
Well, hold on. Tell me about this Ultra.
All right, so...
Have you signed up for an Ultra?
I don't want it to make it about me, Caleb.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's right.
He signed up.
I signed up.
Yeah, what did you sign up for?
It's the Vermont 50. I do it for charity. It's for Vermont Adaptive Sports.
Oh, cool.
And I'm doing the 50K, not the 50-miler, because this is my first time going beyond a marathon distance.
And where is the race? You know, Caleb used to live in Vermont, so he may be familiar with it.
Oh, I knew you'd ask, and I should know this off the top of my head. Do you know the name of the town?
No, we'll drop that in later.
No, I can. Give me a second.
Yeah, give me a second.
I'm so embarrassed.
Dead air.
At beautiful Holiday Inn Club Vacations Mount Scutney?
Mount Scutney.
Okay. Resort, located in West Windsor, Vermont.
All right, let me start
that
again.
That's sort of southernish Vermont.
Yeah, it's only 2 hours away.
Yeah.
So, you know, where in Vermont? Because, you know, Caleb used to live in Vermont and run there quite a bit.
Yeah, it's over at Mount Ascutney. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Mount Ascutney.
That was pretty impressive, this little pass job you guys just did.
Well, you ruined it. Thank you. Let's try that again.
So what we've been doing is we stopped the show for like 30 seconds. I pulled up my smartphone because I don't remember the name of the town. And Brian fed me the line again. And then I masterfully set it up so that we could bring Caleb in as the Vermont expert.
That's right.
And he ruined it by calling it out. It's like, hey, look behind the curtain, everybody. Brian, let's show the people at home one more time how we do this.
Oh, okay. Right. This is called a pickup, everybody.
Okay, let's pick it up for the second time.
Let's pick it up. You know, we're in Vermont because, you know, Caleb used to live in Vermont and run around that great green state quite a bit.
Sure did.
See? Yeah. All professional right there.
All professional now. Hey, Brian, I just happened to look up on my smartphone because I couldn't remember the first three times you asked me. It's Mount Ascutney is where the Vermont 50 takes place. All proceeds, of course, going to Vermont Adaptive Sports.
Wow, that was so smooth.
Anyway, Mount Ascutney. Am I saying that right, really?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not too far deep into Vermont. That's
no, I think it's in the southern. It's sort of southernish.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Two hours north of Boston. That's what I.
And figured. What's the course like?
Trail, hilly. You know, not road. Nothing.
But, I mean,
I'm
is
used
it like
to.
Rolling or is it?
I know. Don't have enough information about that. I need to find that out. I bet you it is rolly. I bet you it's crazy. Now, I know the 50K version is a little bit, it shares a little bit of the 50 miler, but not all. Yeah. And there's also a 100 miler that is, and I don't think it's loop. I think it's one loop, I think. I don't know. I have to find out.
Yeah, those multiple loops, man.
You don't like that?
Not particularly. Although, I mean, where I ran in Ipswich, it was like the Willowdale State Forest. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, you know, and every loop, you know, the time of day is changing, the sunlight's changing, so it does feel a little different. You know, but you are seeing some of the same things.
Yeah. You're going to want to do just the half in Millinocket then. Brian, speak to that.
When you experience that course, we've said this many times, the first, I don't know, 500 yards is basically straight up, and then it's a 6 mile gradual uphill against the wind. The scenery is gorgeous.
Always against the wind?
Always against the wind.
Because it's coming from the North Pole, and it always comes down. The wind is always going straight into your face. But it's 6 miles up, and then you hit, you bang a right, and it's basically a mile
hook a right.
flat.
Yeah.
And then you would think, oh,
I'm good
well,
now.
It's 6 miles back down because it's a half marathon loop.
Right.
It's not. It's still up and up and up until basically the final couple of miles are down. So it's a lot of elevation.
So it's point to point?
No, it's a loop. It's a 13.1-mile loop.
But there's there's that much more uphill than downhill on this loop?
Yeah, because in the last mile or so, there's a lot of you lose all your elevation again. So you basically go up, 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 and then you go flat, and then you go down and up, and down and up, and down and up, 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 and then finally you come down. But at that point, your quads are destroyed.
Right. I'm not doing it.
And
I'm out.
You come around.
Just do the half. I'm doing the half.
But I'll tell you, I would give anything to get rid of this hip problem and do it because it's like any challenge. You know, it kind of defeated me in many ways. The cold weather had a lot to do with it. The cold
wasn't
wind
like
had
9 degrees?
By the end. It started much warmer than that. It was like 18.
Yeah, it started around 18. I think we had a high of like 21, 22
but
middle of the day.
Now I want to beat that course. I want to beat my time on that course because I think I learned some things about it, and I would be psyched to do it again. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it
physically. He rebounded remarkably fast.
Yeah,
for the kind of day it was.
I was in good shape.
You came out really, you were very well trained.
In fact, it was my hip that hurt me then.
That's interesting.
You know, my hip was hurting me. You can go back and listen to that podcast. I was saying the night before I had a phantom taper pain. It wasn't a phantom taper pain, as it turns out. It was my hip, and it's the same
issue. You
mean
our award-winning Millinocket episode, because we gave ourselves an award because we think it's so good?
The potty?
We gave ourselves the potty, P-O-D-D-Y, the potty, yes. P-O-D-D-Y awards that we're starting to get
the
off the ground.
The spotty
potty? Yeah.
No, I don't want the spotty potty?
Spotty potty.
Mm.
Come on, break.
Do you mind taking a minute to talk about your other big article that you've had published in Runner's World?
Sure.
Yeah, you wrote a feature story on addiction and running, and it was really powerful. It was a very excellent article. Can you give us a little bit of the gist of where that came from and some of the research that you did?
Sure. It has sort of a tortured history. I filed that story, I don't know, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I pitched it around the time when my book, my memoir came out, Running Ransom Road, which is basically, you know, my story of recovery and sobriety through running and that whole thing. And so at the time when that book came out, I was, you know, you're thinking about sort of publicity and you're thinking about, you know, what how can I sort of further the conversation and keep the topic going. And so I started looking into the actual science of what was happening and, you know, if there was science about what happens in the brain or in the addicted brain when running is introduced. And there was, you know, it turned out there was a woman, a neuroscientist out of the University of Virginia who had compiled all these studies, like hundreds of studies of where they had shown that, 10 minutes on a treadmill, by recently detoxed alcoholics showed a lower relapse rate, a lot of preclinical trials showed that there was relapse was being prevented when aerobic exercise was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the scientific version of my book. There is some sort of personal stuff in it, but what is significant, I guess, about it, and I mean, because everyone in the sober running community knows all this, you know, they know that running,
because they're living it.
They're living it, and they just know by experience that. You know, your stress levels go down, your depression gets softened, your anxieties get softened. It's not for most people, it's not sort of a cure-all, but it's definitely a huge tool in their like sobriety toolkit. So the fact that running helps in recovery is nothing really new, but what is significant is that there is actual science behind what is happening. Like, they're proving that it's not just anecdotal. What I think that does is it gives people hope. People who are struggling, because they might see somebody who's, used to be a hardcore heroin addict, is now a big runner, and they might look at that person and say, well, that's just that person. How does this, he was just built that way or something. But it's like, no, you know, what's going on in his brain can also be going on in your brain. So that was one big, highlight for me about it, was that, that was different. And the other thing is that, documenting that there's these molecular changes happening in the brain that sort of position you to avoid relapse, especially like in very early sobriety. They show that if you institute, treadmill running, like right away, that, you really lower the chance that you're going to relapse. So I think it also sends a big message to, rehabilitation facilities that they should institute exercise programs, like vigorous exercise programs, immediately, and not just make it like a feature. Like you could take yoga or something, or you could,
but
you could
day run. One go out.
Right. And there's this up in Ottawa, there's a rehab that actually mandates running for their, for their patients. It's like, you have to, it's like five runs a week. They stage their own races. I mean, they have a track at the rehab that you run on. They've got a trail system nearby. I mean, it's very like a prominent part, and they've got a pretty good success rate. Their clients are like the really down and outs, been through the court system a million times, and they're having good success with it.
What do you think is holding back that sort of model from becoming more mainstream?
I don't know. Pharmaceutical industry?
Yeah.
you're talking about, a pair of running shoes.
Right.
Being,
some guidance and some accountability, all of that. I mean, it has to be part of a program.
Right, right. But it's something that's pretty simple. You don't necessarily need to take pills to soften your, obviously severe depression requires, a more aggressive approach, but for sort of mild depression, anxiety, stress, you know, you don't necessarily need to take pills. I mean, I used to take pills when I first got sober. I don't take any pills anymore. You know, it's too cynical to think that it's not being sort of pursued aggressively because it's, you know, so easy and it doesn't make anybody any money.
I think there's also a little bit of lag time for adoption of new infrastructure, right? Because what you're talking about is a place has to say, okay, we're going to put somebody in charge of this program and we're going to do athletics. And it's a bit of a, they'd have to see it to know it works to then implement the work.
Right.
But of course it does work.
Right. And there is science.
To show
it. There are, you know, clinical, preclinical trials that have taken place that show, and it's not just running, it's aerobic exercise, but obviously running is the easiest thing to adopt, that it does alter, you know, parts of your brain that when you first get sober sort of start calcifying, like the craving mechanism.
Okay.
And so aerobic running or aerobic exercise and running sort of alters that, and it positions you to, you know, avoid relapse, which is like the number one problem with addiction. I mean, it's, you know, the percentage of people who relapse in the first year is very high, you know, especially with something like heroin, you know, but even alcohol has a high relapse rate. So it, you know, it really positions you for success right away, right out of the gate. I mean, I think that would be the secondary benefit of, you know, of this information getting out there.
What's the reception been like for that article?
I've heard from, you know, a lot of, you know, recovering addicts and alcoholics. And I mean, a lot of people are like, you know, yes, right on. It's worked for me. I've heard from some like psychiatrists. I mean, most people are like, you know, thank you for getting that out there. This is what we've been pushing for a long time. So I think it validates, you know, what they've been trying to push. So it's, you know, it's been pretty healthy response.
And response around the vegan articles, is that as receptive?
It's curious, the vegan articles, especially this last one. I found that I've gotten it from both sides. I've gotten flack from vegans and I've gotten flack from meat eaters. The flack I get from vegans is that I'm not doing it right. You know, too much processed food, or you know, that marshmallow actually has gelatin, and gelatin is, you know, animal product, and you know, so I get sort of taken to task a little bit.
You know, I'm just going to throw out something here.
Yeah.
That some people might say that that's not a surprise coming from someone who's a vegan. Taking it a task for marshmallows.
Well, see, yeah, I mean, you know, vegans do have a reputation.
They come with a reputation.
Right, and the thing is, like, you know, I didn't do, the only reason I did this was purely for fitness. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's hard not to, you get sucked into the world. I mean, and also, you know, you get educated. You become much more conscious about what you eat. I mean, I was a totally mindless meat eater. I mean, I just opened my pie hole and in went the meat. You know, feed in a furnace.
Unclear but, where it came from or what it was.
Didn't matter. Well, you know, off the street, off my shoe, didn't matter.
You mentioned the Rich Roll podcast, and I started listening for a couple of specific guests, and like, you know, three shows in, I'm already ready to give up meat. So it is very intriguing.
Right. I mean, there's...
Especially when people are so successful.
Right. You know, just athletically super successful, but for your general health, it's, you know, there's so many papers that have shown that how positive it is. I mean, the environmental impact, animal welfare, all that stuff. But that stuff, like, I don't really get into in the column because I'm trying to keep it focused on the fitness and
right.
You know, and I don't want to come off as like, you know, a moralizer or that vegan guy. And
you're taking more of a performance approach. Like, is this actually doing anything?
Right.
For
I'm trying
me?
To do that. But you know, every once in a while, you know, I'll mention like when I was having trouble with in the first couple of weeks when I was like feeling sick and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. You know, I went out, I mean, I ordered up on Netflix, you know, Cowspiracy and Forks Over Knives, which are two very powerful documentaries. I think they're completely legitimate, and one deals with health benefits and one deals with environmental impact. And to me, they were very eye-opening. So I felt fortified to keep going. So it's like you can't help but get educated in like what you eat and where it comes from and the impact and all that stuff. But I mean, I do try and not, you know, push that very much, you know, in the pieces. And but still, it's almost like meat eaters get a whiff of that, they can smell a little bit of it, and they react, you know, and they, you know, I mean, one guy said, you know, I'm sure the reason he didn't PR at his marathon was because he was too busy telling everybody he was a vegan and how great he was and how shitty they were for eating meat. You know, it's like that sort of thing.
That's not fair.
Not that you read those comments, but
well,
I mean,
sometimes I feel a little masochistic, and I'll go through some comments. But, yeah.
And not that that stuck out.
Well, how do you feel about it moving forward? Are you going to stay on the vegan train?
I'd like to. I mean, it's really an evolution. And I mean, right now I do refer to myself like as a plant-based runner. Because vegan is like a whole lifestyle. It's like not wearing leather shoes, leather belts. It's, you know, your bedding has to be, a particular, you know, have to be sourced in a particular way. Your clothes, all that stuff. And it's like a little much to do all at once. It's overwhelming. So right now, I guess my next step is I want to try and sort of cut out processed foods entirely. And just go.
That's so hard.
And just go, you know, whole food, non-processed. And do more sort of batch cooking, get more smoothies involved. It's an evolution, for sure.
It's a challenge, too. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that is a real... I'm going to be interested to see how that works for you, because I assume, because you've only moved in a relatively short period to being a meat eater to a vegetarian to a vegan, you're still sort of filling the gap with processed food and a lot of tofu-based products.
Right.
And like you've mentioned, this burger, which, I mean, is it's plant-based, but it's also fairly processed.
Right, right.
And we all know that eating whole foods is healthier, but convenience plays a big part of it.
Right. But, I mean, the difference between where I was, you know, 10 months ago as a, you know, hardcore meat eater and now is huge, you know, and it's very clear to me that my fitness and running has improved.
Have you had to reduce the types of meals you eat, or do you think it's expanded your menu, actually?
You have to eat a lot more. You know, there's a lot of grazing that happens.
You mean frequently, more times frequently during the day.
Yeah. So there's more grazing. I mean, I still feel like I usually have sort of a biggish dinner, which I've always had. The portion size of like breakfast, lunch, and dinner is pretty much the same, but there's much more snacking and stuff in between. I'm probably between 6 and 8 servings of fruits and vegetables a day.
Wow.
You know, most days.
Does your skin or hair feel any different? And that's not a joke. I'm actually asking.
People
that.
Have actually said something about my skin.
Yeah.
You're glowing more now. Am I?
Oh, a little bit. Well, because you're in the lights, but yeah.
I mean, people have mentioned that. I mean, people have definitely made comments about like a change in appearance.
But can you feel like, is there elasticity to your skin that there wasn't there before?
I'm not checking that frequently.
How about hip injuries?
Or joints. No, but joints and ligaments. Like, do you feel that you don't get as sore, or do you get more sore?
I mean, right now I do have a bit of a glute issue. But one of the other benefits of, you know, of a plant-based diet is your recovery time is usually... accelerated. I mean, that's one of the big things that they talk about because of antioxidants and the increase in that. So I do feel like I'm able to tackle bigger, like even after that 50 miler. I mean, I was stiff the next day, but you know, that was on a Saturday, and I was doing the stadium on Wednesday, you know, 3 days later.
Wow. So I saw you there. You look great.
Yeah.
You look strong and you were ready.
Yeah. So
to go.
I think recovery is improved for sure.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I'm fascinated by it. I don't think I could ever go fully vegan. Oh. Why are you looking at me like that? You just did an up and down look.
Because like the ultra marathon, like you were about to make enormous announcement.
No, I'm not.
Your training diet over the next 16 weeks.
Absolutely not true.
You can do it.
I'm just enough with that.
Yeah. Caleb, you're working on them. Keep going.
No, all I was saying was I don't think vegan is me. I love eggs. I love cheese. I can cut back on all other dairy, but cheese is really tough for me to let go. I think giving up meat is a real eventuality for me. I do, because I feel that whether it's an ethical thing or not, but I definitely feel a responsibility, because I look at it like this. I'm not going to go kill it. Now, if I was willing to go kill it myself, I'd have a different story for you, but I'm not willing to end a life to eat. That's not what I want to do. I'm in an institution or an industrialized nation.
A society.
Where everything is sort of 15 steps removed. So, it magically is here. I'll eat it. That's great. But if I actually had to go do it, I wouldn't do it. So when I start thinking about it in those terms, I'm like, right. Well, then...
What's that? Paul McCartney has a quote like, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be a vegetarian.
Yeah. Oof. Some people wouldn't, though. Some people are like, yeah, it's cool. I'll kill it. I mean, I think you can get... If you grew up on a farm, you're certainly like, yeah, where do you think it all comes from? Okay. Yeah. But I know for me that that's something I know in the future is coming my way. Veganism, though... Oh, it's just so hard to navigate.
It is. It is.
But...
Well, because that's because dairy and eggs are in everything.
Right.
They're in everything.
Yes. So you've got to, you're constantly reading labels, which isn't a bad thing to be reading labels, but you're constantly reading labels until you really get into the flow of it.
But I would also approach it from like, well, nothing technically died for me to have these eggs and cheese, technically, depending on where you get it from and how they're sourced. You know.
Well, and that's part of it. I mean, I have chickens.
I know, I like your chickens.
I eat their eggs, and they're
fantastic. I'm on a first-name basis with most of your chickens.
And I think these chickens have a pretty good life.
They do have a good life.
However, I guess the idea is that it would be better for the chickens to live naturally, however it is, and I'm still confining them, I guess. I actually don't know much about the veganism besides the food strictures, the other parts of it, I don't really actually know very much about.
But there's no one viewpoint, right? I mean, isn't it a tapestry of people's opinions and motivations?
I mean, I think most vegans will say they won't eat anything with a mother or a face.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty standard. And I think animal welfare is a huge thing.
It's a piece of it, yeah.
It's a huge thing. I think that's what gets meat eaters upset the most, I think, probably, because they feel like they're being judged.
They are.
I'm judging you right now.
I know you're looking right at me and you're judging me.
I've got my robes on. And my powdered wig.
You know, pants, but you have a robe on. Yeah. And Brian's looking at me telling me to throw down verbal. No.
Let's verbal on a vegetarian diet. Absolutely for not. The Vermont 50K. Let's do it.
That's ridiculous. You stop. How about
people, cards, letters, social media? Let's get the pressure on.
Maybe you should go vegan after your surgery to hasten the recovery. Boom.
No.
Well, the thing is now, I mean...
That was quick.
You know, I mean, one tack you can always take is, you know, the environmental tack, you know, especially with what just happened with Trump pulling out of the Paris Accord. You know, what can one person do to affect climate change? You know, and it's definitely, you know, factory farming, big agricultural farming definitely has a huge impact on that. So... There's not a lot of moralizing involved in that one.
No, but this is powerful stuff, Caleb. I don't.
But I'm not a vegan spokesman. I'm just trying to be a plant-based runner. And
is this a lifetime thing? Do you think, or do you
I don't know. That's what Brian had asked. At one point, I thought, well, maybe I'll go pescatarian, you know, and just eat fish. I don't think I'd go back to dairy. I don't think I'd go back to meat. I mean, it'd be nice to, you know, have some, you know, an Alaska roll every once in a while, you know, or salmon roll. Mm. I don't know. I guess I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
That's pretty stunning, actually, after only not even a year of a massive diet change like that, to have you say, I'm ready to go back right now. This experiment is over. It had nice benefits, but I like the food that I used to eat. So it's pretty stunning.
What, to go back or not?
No,
go back?
No,
to say that you're sure
you're
not.
You're not going to, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would. Part of me feels like what I'd like to do, a little experiment, is, you know, order up a large pepperoni pizza and see what happens to my body.
To eat it and see what happens.
Yeah, to see what happens.
Well, that's an interesting question, though. Is that the food in your mind's eye when you think about, well, from an experiment standpoint, is that this pizza the one that comes to your mind?
I mean, that was, you know, pepperoni pizza is probably, you know, desert island food for sure. Over burgers, probably.
Wow, pepperoni pizza is so specific. It's funny, I think, because pepperoni is so intense.
I know, it's one or the other. You would either eat the entire thing in like 5 minutes, or you would get through about a half a bite, a slice,
and say that's it.
And it would be so overwhelming in a negative way.
Yeah, like I feel like I want to just do it. I just want to, like, you know,
just
see what,
to
see what would happen. Yeah. You know, I'm always looking for content. You guys know I need content.
Well, speaking of that, what are your projects? Are you working on any projects right now coming up?
Right now, I'm writing about my child in Washington D.C., but it all is moving toward when we moved to the former Soviet Union and that sort of transition and the bizarre, surreal life that became. So it's sort of, a memoir project right now.
Well, speaking of that, I have one last question. Can you tell me what your forearm tattoo says? I know it's in Russian, and what it means.
It says, Cheriz ne mogu, which literally means, through I can't, which I know confused you earlier.
It sure did. I thought, through I can't, that's such a negative statement. What do you mean,
He thought it was basically saying, give in to your fears and doubts.
That's right. Just stop what you're doing because you can't. Yeah. Through you cannot go, as Yoda would say.
However, the story behind it is that my Soviet gymnastics coach, who was a little sadistic when it came to pull-ups.
I know what it means. I know what it means. It means you have to go through I can't.
Exactly.
You have to get on the other side of it.
Through your mind saying, I can't do this next pull-up.
Get past that now
get
and
past
go
that
do it.
Idea that you can't do it and do it. So it's basically the Nike slogan.
Not really. I always say just do it as like get off the couch and put on your sneakers and go run. That's what just do it is. This is like when you're up against the wall, go through the wall.
Yeah.
But if it had said through, comma, I can't.
Oh, you're getting all then we'd have Oxford comma.
But then we'd have a problem.
Through exclamation point. I can't, said emoji.
Dot, dot, dot. And how long have you had that?
I don't know, a year or so.
All right, Caleb, thank you so much.
That's it.
Do you want to have more to say?
He has much more to say.
I really had to. I had to work on getting all that out.
He'll be back in a year. We have him back every year.
I want to know. Am I the first repeat guest?
Official, yeah.
To have a full episode. We had a lot of people, obviously, for the marathon. It was a three-hour show.
That doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
That end of the year thing.
Didn't count. No, you're the...
This is substance.
Well, you understand how we feel about you, right?
Yeah.
You changed the show.
Tell me how you feel.
Well, okay, so we did the show for like about...
I'm still waiting to see my name on the credits, on the show notes.
Oh, boy. What's going on? You mean like founder?
Yeah, co-founder.
No, it doesn't have to be founder. Spiritual guru could work.
Inspiration? No, but we were 6 months in when we had you for episode 32. For anybody who's listening and wants to go back, it's an excellent episode.
I remember it was in a broom closet.
It was in a broom closet, and you changed, you kicked open sort of our ability to find and meet with and be with guests of a certain caliber.
He actually connected us to people. I mean, it was more than that. It was sort of. I started going to NP
I didn't want to get so literal, man.
Every week, Caleb was like, hey, I've got another person who should be on the podcast.
I was trying to say he upped our game.
He did up our game.
Your game is pretty up. It's pretty up.
HWRT, executive produced by Caleb Daniloff.
Nice.
There we go.
Is that what you want?
Yes.
That's what you're saying you want.
Yes. Is that so much? Is that so much to ask?
You're the Tori Malatia of HWRT.
We're going to have to go back now to 81 episodes before this and put it all new beds.
I'd like that. No, you can just start at whatever mine was, 32.
Caleb, go home.
With pleasure.
We're done here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Caleb. Right.
Always a pleasure.
We'll see you in a year.
All right, if you're lucky. Right.
I hope so.
Hey! This has been episode 82 of How Is Your Run Today with Peter Villa and Brian Gould, recorded at the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Music by Jeff Cronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence. And special thanks to Caleb Daniloff.
Listen to us every week wherever you collect podcasts. Caleb keeps his with all his plant-based fake meat. But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Every single one of those makes a difference in how this little here show is ranked.
Join us every Saturday on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram with your Sat Chats. Tell us where you ran, how the weather was, and include a sweet, sweet photo.
And fulfill all of your HWRT shopping needs at our Redbubble store.
And if you love HWRT, please share our posts on social media. It's free, and it's easier than sitting across the table from a pepperoni pizza and not knowing whether to eat it.
I don't think he would do it.
I don't think he would do it either.
He talks a good game, but it's interesting that that's like his fantasy food. His fantasy science experiment food.
This isn't an experiment, Peter. This is real life.
I'm eating a Rice Krispie treat and it's made with gelatin.
Well, for everything else, please visit hwyrt.com. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Brian.
Have a great kickoff to your 16-week training program, ending with a 50K race.
I'm excited. I just bought trail shoes at the New Balance Factory Outlet Store. We're just going to put that.
That's the end.
Put that
and
right
that's
over.
It, folks.
And put that broom right where you need it. But whenever you visit that special podcast place, please give us a rating and a comment. Thank you very much. The social media guru and I ran hills yesterday because she's training for the 10K. The 10K. Let's do that whole bit again.